T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hopefully your Wednesday is going swimmingly. We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan. Big hour coming up, including Drew Brees back to the Saints, the Redskins missing out on Greg Olsen, the news that Adrian Peterson is coming back to Washington, and the continued fallout for the Astros. Aaron Judge has taken them to task. That is a big, angry man. Aaron Judge about to hit some bombs.
Not thrilled with the Astros, I would say.
Commissioner Rob Manfred, to his credit, actually apologized for something he said was unacceptable. So we'll tell you what that was, all coming up this hour. But it is time for our Beltway Blitz on the teams in town, including the Caps and the Wiz that you care the most about. So let's get started. Michael Phillips of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Michael, I just saw moments ago Ben Standing of the Athletic reporting that Jordan Reed has indeed now been cleared from the league's concussion protocol program. The scuttlebutt was, when this happened, the Redskins would release him. I guess there's just no chance they're hanging on to him at this point. They feel like they've rode this roller coaster long enough.
No, and you're getting a fresh start, obviously. I hope they do right by him once he clears the protocol. That obviously makes it more difficult for him to get an injury settlement out of this. But he's had so many injuries, missed so much time, that I certainly hope, however this ends, he gets taken care of.
What are they going to do at tight end? This is not a great draft class, allegedly. I mean, you never know where these guys are coming from. Kittle was a fifth-round pick. But the free agent market might be kind of shallow. There are guys that with wrinkles that are a little bit flawed, whether it's an Eric Ebron or somebody like that. They need to upgrade that spot, though, desperately, Miguel.
Yeah, and, Rivera runs a lot of two tight end sets. He's certainly known for, using that position. We'll see how they go, obviously. Every offense is a new one. Every look is a new one. It's not mandatory that they get a Kittle, a star guy in there. You can certainly make do if you have great receivers, great running backs, good offensive line. You don't need a superstar at that position, but it never hurts. They're going to have to load up. I think you're going to need at least one guy in free agency. Depending on how you feel about Hale Henches and the guys in the building, you're probably going to that free agent undrafted well as well. It's going to be a position to watch in training camp. They're going to need a lot of bodies there, a lot of new guys to learn the system.
Adrian Peterson, as Danny says, coming back helps you. But I want to know what happens if the carries get divvied up so that you got these two kids that are healthy, and now you got three guys waiting on touches. What if Bryce Love is there? What if Darius Geis is there and available? Is Adrian Peterson going to play ball?
Well, I hope everybody learned their lesson last year, and Jay Gruden certainly learned his lesson when he made Peterson inactive in week one, and then Peterson comes storming back after that. He's still got a lot of football left in him, and, I don't think you can have too much insurance at the running back position in the NFL. There's a lot of teams where you say, oh, man, what if everybody's healthy? And these things always tend to work themselves out. It's a brutal position. You got two guys there with serious injury histories. Love coming back from his injury. It's not to suggest he's injury prone, just, he hasn't played NFL football yet. And Darius Geis wears that label until further notice, just based on what's happened in his career. So, no, I don't think I would be confident at all going into a season with just Geis and Love. I think you got too many question marks there. I think you need an Adrian Peterson. If there's early season discontent, well, that's why the coaches make a lot of money. It's their job to navigate that. You're probably going to need all three of them, though, to make it through an NFL season.
Seinfeld-style question here. What's the deal with Brandon Scherff? What's happening there?
Well, I continue to beat the drum. I think it'd be very smart to keep him in the building, keep him on board. He's got options. He's in the Kirk Cousins can play his cards right and earn a lot of money boat, whether that's forcing a franchise tag designation from the team. That's a good outcome for him. A lot of money to play football this year, gets paid at that, $15 million high-end level. A contract would certainly net him a lot of money as well. And then a tag going into free agency would probably net him even more a year from now, especially if he has a good year. So all options involved him making a lot of money. The question is whether the Redskins want to commit that money. I'm a big believer. You take a guy top 10 in the draft, you don't take him top 10 in the draft so you can use his services for 5 years and then move on. These are franchise players, cornerstone players. I think you got to lock them down.
Thank you, Michael. Much appreciated.
You bet.
Let's talk some puck. Rob Carlin of NBC Sports Washington. Rob, the Caps trade for Brendan Dillon, a defenseman from San Jose. Who is he? What's the deal?
He's big. He's physical. He's 6'4", 225. He's a left-handed defenseman. When I reached out yesterday to get some more intel on him from people in San Jose, the first 6 minutes were all about the person he is. And Randy Hahn, their longtime play-by-play guy, said he's the best human being we've had in our dressing room in 29 years.
Wow.
So they're getting a quality guy and a top four defenseman. So all those things, and a physical guy. So all those things are boxes you want to check. The question becomes, it's another left-handed defenseman, and I think we all assumed if they're going to go after someone on the defense, it would be a right-handed top four guy. But then again, literally every team in the playoff chase is looking to get a right-handed top four defenseman. There just aren't many. So I think they're a better team today. Now it's on the coaching staff to figure out what the combination is going to be, you know, for the three defense pairs and whether or not they're going to have to play someone on their offhand.
So how did they always pull this off with no money? You know, on the show that airs before yours a couple days ago, I was asked, what would you do at the deadline? And I said I wouldn't do anything because I don't think you could add anyone particularly helpful with the lack of money that you have without basically getting rid of somebody's contract. Brian McClellan and the staff always seem to do that. I just don't get how the math works.
I was not good in math when I had to study it every day in high school, so I'm certainly not good at it now, but that's a credit to the front office, the way they go about business. It's also a credit to, they worked a deal with San Jose where the Sharks are paying half his salary and half his cap hit. And from, again, what I was able to tell from talking to San Jose people yesterday, Doug Wilson, the GM with the Sharks, it's important to him when he knows he has to get rid of a quality person and the quality player that he wants to send them someplace where they have a legitimate shot to win the Stanley Cup. And it was important to him to get Brendan Dillon into a good situation like that. And I think that worked into why he would be willing to eat some of that money to get this deal done. So, you know, again, that's a credit to McClellan and the staff. And it doesn't sound like they're done. They're certainly listening to more. At that point, I think you'd have to move out some sort of a contract, but I joked with him. I did a one-on-one with him a few minutes ago, and I said, "So you done?" He goes, "I don't know. We'll see. It'd be boring to sit around and not take calls." So, I think they're going to listen and try and get something done and see what happens to make the team better.
Uncle Rob, they've got the fourth best record in the conference, and if you just said that before the season started, I don't think anybody would be concerned. But how we got here is kind of concerning with the recent trend of ups of some teams and down for the Capitals. Is this enough to kind of snap them out of it?
I mean, I hope so. It's interesting because when Mac talked to the big group of assembled media, he brought up something that another player I had spoken to about a week or two ago mentioned. They could play the game, the structure and the system the right way and try and win games 1-0. It's there. The system is in place. They're just not doing it right now. So they have to Mac said that there's a little bit of cheat in the game for everybody. It's not just the defense. It's a five-man unit. And they have to sort of commit themselves. They're in a bad stretch. Tampa was in a bad stretch earlier. Pittsburgh was in a bad stretch, albeit they had a lot of injuries at the time. But teams have gone through this. This happens to be the Caps' time. I don't think you can look at this roster and say they're not going to get out of it. There's too much talent, and there's too much of an understanding of what has to be done because they've now done it. So they know how to get themselves out of it. I think they will, and by playoff time, they'll be ready to go. But this is a pretty big sample size. It's 22 games now of 500 hockey. It's time for them to start figuring out the right way and committing themselves to playing the game the right way.
For the first time in over 120 days, they're not in first in the Metro. A point behind the Penguins, who they've actually played one more game than, which is problematic. They're also minus 14 in terms of goal differential from Pittsburgh. All of a sudden, the fourth best team in the conference, according to points. Rob, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
All right, see you guys.
See you, buddy.
Let's talk some hoops. Nick Ashew, you see him on DC Sports Live on television because he's too good-looking for radio
so
at this
handsome.
Point. Nick, what did you make of the All-Star festivities, painting with a broad brush from the know, Kobe celebratory acts to the three-point contest and the dunk contest?
In terms of the Kobe thing first, I think we knew it was going to be there was going to be a lot, and I think they did a great job with it from the entire thing, from the songs and the presentations to the way they actually did it in the game and everybody wearing number 2 or number 24. In terms of the game specifically, that was a lot of fun. I mean, that's what you want. I mean, all these leagues are looking for ways to make their all-star games more competitive, more watchable, and I think the NBA found their formula for theirs. I mean, they tried some new things. I see that fourth quarter being the way that it is for a while, with that Elam ending and making it untimed and making it more competitive. They did a good job initially with doing that by letting them pick teams, right? It has kind of that feel of the playground. Two guys are picking teams. They're a little more competitive than just East-West. The slam dunk contest was fun, whether you think Aaron Gordon should have won or not. Overall, you had the excitement. You had all this generated interest and conversation about an all-star weekend that doesn't always necessarily get that anymore.
Nick, not only are you handsome, but you have really cool outfits. The Wizards start their second half here Friday night. It's not even a half. It's like the final 36% of the season. Give me some things you're looking for here as this group is in the ninth spot in the Eastern Conference, a few games back of Orlando. What are some keys? What are some stories you're following?
And isn't it funny? We always talk about like post-all-star break for any league and say it's like the second half. It's not actually really a half.
Less than 40%,
Davis Burke. Yeah, I want to see how some of the new guys fit in terms of, like, you know, Robinson and Napier, and how they fit with this team maybe moving forward. Those are small moves, but those are moves in terms of depth for this team. I actually want to see them push for the playoffs. I know I've certainly been on record many times as saying I'd like them to get a higher draft pick. This isn't a very talented draft. It's been well documented. There's not a lot of game-changing talent necessarily coming out of this draft. For this young team to even push for a playoff spot and just be in that mode, in that atmosphere of knowing what it's like to compete down the stretch for even just an 8th seed would actually go a long way, because they're young, they're inexperienced. A lot of them are, obviously, not all of them. It would help them grow. They've got a lot of things they need to add. We know that. There's a lot of holes that need to fill. But to put themselves in that position and be in competitive games late in the season would be really good for the overall just makeup of this roster.
Nick, thank you, buddy. We appreciate the info.
Anytime, guys.
That's the Beltway Blitz. We do it each day at noon. Gets you up to speed on the teams you care the most about with people who follow and cover those teams closely. Next, Drew Brees is returning. Made the announcement yesterday. He is going to stick with New Orleans, signing another contract with the Saints. With him coming back, what does that mean for the NFC power structure? Get to that next on G&D on the Fan. 23 to 30 million. I didn't say that wrong. Jeremy Fowler, ESPN, yesterday floated the idea that Bridgewater could get $30 million a year. Can you imagine?
What planet is this?
And people are upset because Kirk Cousins makes 28.
Remember, they were upset because they didn't want to pay him 19.
It was just casually thrown for an average of like 4,300 yards and 28 touchdowns for every year he's ever started.
Yeah, he's a flawed quarterback. But
let me know when Teddy Bridgewater does that.
It's the quarterback market, man.
Anyway, Drew Brees comes back. He's 41. He'll be 42 at the end of this coming season. So this will be an age 41 campaign. He will not turn 42 until after the regular season, basically when they're playing their first playoff game. Last year, he was excellent again. 27 touchdowns and 4 picks. He didn't play in 5 games, or else that could have easily been somewhere around mid-40s touchdowns and, who knows, 7 or 8 picks. But the rating was 116. It was actually, from a quarterback rating standpoint, the highest of his career. And he's never been as efficient as he was last year. So Taysom Hill goes back to being a gimmicky trick quarterback slash H-back slash receiver slash special teamer. Brees comes back as your starter. Bridgewater will move on in free agency. And if you're the New Orleans Saints, I don't know about you, Danny, but I would say going into next season, they would be dead even with me, along with the San Francisco 49ers, as the best bets to represent the conference in the Super Bowl. If you're looking at a short list, it'd be something along the lines of San Fran, New Orleans, Seattle, Green Bay, Philly, something like that. The next wave might be teams like Minnesota or Dallas or the Rams. But I would say San Francisco and New Orleans, a drop-off, and then Philly, Green Bay, Seattle, however you want to rank that, in another drop-off, you're looking for tiers.
A lot's going to depend on what they do this offseason. And that's for every team, obviously. But they, right now, according to OverTheCap.com, have only $9 million in cap space. And that's with Drew Brees counting 15-9 in terms of something that's prorated.
Do you think he'll get? Probably $34 million,
yeah,
$35 million?
He's going to get an awful lot more. So who do you have to get rid of? If there's a couple bloated contracts, this is done and there's no problem. But if you have very important pieces that have to go, then maybe they're not the same group.
A lot of times when you pay guys who are the legends in that town, specifically the quarterback, but a lot of times, like, if there's a guy that's been around for all the good times and one of the reasons why you win and get to the Super Bowl and have a championship, guys are willing to take pay cuts to help keep that guy.
Right.
This is not, I'll just use Cousins because we were just talking about him, Minnesota going and getting Cousins and then going to, say, Xavier Rhodes and saying, hey, man, we're bringing in this quarterback who's never played here before and is okay and he played for the Redskins. We're going to pay him a lot of money. Will you take less money? I think guys will look at that and go, get out of here. Leave my office immediately.
Right.
But while if, you know, Teddy Bridgewater, I'll just say, signed with the Dolphins this offseason, if you came to me and I'm the best player on the Dolphins and you say, take less money, we're trying to get Teddy Bridgewater, I would say no. But when you come to me in New Orleans and you say, hey, man, we're bringing Drew Brack for one more.
Hey, Terron Armstead, you got a $16 million cap hit. We got to lower that to 13.
All right, let's make that,
to bring Drew back.
Let's make that 9. Let's move money around down the line, and there's $7 million to help with Drew Brees. I think guys are more willing to do that.
I would say so, especially for this group that's that good. I mean, they are. They're right there, right, at least on paper. Again, a lot will depend on if they're able to kind of supplement that talent.
Definitively better than them or not. So I'll give you a team, and you say better chance to win the Super Bowl than the Saints this year, yes or no? Chiefs.
No.
Okay, then there might be nobody.
That's where I'm going with this.
Ravens.
No.
I'm going through the Vegas odds right now. 49ers.
No, Super Bowl hangover.
Patriots.
No.
So the Saints, in your opinion, with Breeze, have as good of a chance of winning the title as anybody next year.
Absolutely. And they should be one of the odds-on favorites to get back there.
I think I agree with you, honestly. I might put... See, if Kansas City hadn't just won, because they won, you don't see back-to-back.
That's kind of, so I eliminated
maybe
Kansas
Baltimore.
City because of back-to-back. I eliminated San Fran because of the losing
exactly.
Super Bowl hangover.
So now it's like Baltimore, New England. They're not any better than New Orleans.
Right. Is Drew Brees? Drew Brees, geez. Is Tom Brady quarterback in New England? We think so.
Probably, but
right?
We don't know.
We don't know. I mean, listen, so much changes between now and then. I mean, a team that we're not even considering could be this definitive favorite by midseason next year. Think of San Francisco. I don't think anybody had him as the Super Bowl, you know, prohibitive favorite out of the NFC at any point until, you know, they ripped off 8 straight wins to start the year. But on paper, right now, this minute, New Orleans is very well positioned. You've got the Dallas Cowboys of the early 90s style situation, right? The dynamic running back, one great receiver on the outside, and a maestro at quarterback who's always in the right play, ball's always out on time. Now you start to add in some of the supplemental stuff. I think they need one more weapon on offense. I know it sounds crazy to talk about New Orleans and needing something on offense, but I think there are, against elite defenses, against really good defenses, there are moments where, you know, you get to 3rd and 8, you know it's going to Michael Thomas. They need somebody opposite him, whether it's a tight end, whether it's a second receiver. I think they're just
they
one
can do
player
that with
away.
A draft pick.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what I think will happen.
Bridgewater, by the way, started weeks 2 through 7, those 5 games. He mostly was a caretaker. So he came off the bench in that game against the Chargers in L.A. And maybe it was the Rams. Actually,
Rams game where they lost. Yeah, they didn't look good.
And they were awful, and he was, you know, as much a victim as anything else. But he didn't play particularly well. They lost. He started the following 5 games after that. The first game against the Seahawks, he handed the ball off a lot and threw for 177 yards. The next week against Dallas, he threw for 193, no touchdowns and a pick.
That was the game, by the way, where I went, New Orleans is complete. I know we're not talking, the offense didn't do anything. Defensively, they shoved it on the Cowboys, who've been putting up 40 points a week.
They won 12-10.
Yeah.
So everyone will do the Teddy Bridgewater just wins, though.
Sure.
Their offense was awful, and they scored 12 points, and they won the game because their defense and special teams were exceptional. Now, the week after that, to his credit, he was great against Tampa Bay. And as we would see as the year went along, everybody who plays the quarterback position was great against Tampa Bay.
Sure, who wasn't?
It was hard not to be great against that defense. They were horrific. But he threw for 4 touchdowns and 300 yards, and it was a career game for him in a lot of ways. After that, he had 2 more starts at Jacksonville. They scored 13 points. They won 13-6 on their defensive prowess. He had a touchdown and no picks. Just kind of a meh game.
Mm-hmm.
And the week after that against the Bears, he was pretty solid. 2 touchdowns, no picks. Really good defense, 281 yards. I remember watching that game. I loved his performance. They ended up scoring 36 in that game. He also scrambled, I think, 4 times for 7 or 8 yards, and one of those picked up a first down, if memory serves. But he was 5-0 as a starter. Mm-hmm. The team didn't, quote-unquote, miss a beat. defensively, they got better. Special teams, they got better. And I'm with you. At that point, you said, this is a true Super Bowl contender here. I mean, this is a team that could absolutely win the title. I say all that about Bridgewater to just ask, you know, where do you think he ends up? Like, the Bears are not moving on from Trubisky to bring him in, even though they're on the verge of the quarterback market. The Colts would be a nice little interesting landing spot. How much better is he than Jacoby Brissett? I would say
not $20 million better.
No, I would say a little bit better, but not enough that you would pay him that money. The Chargers are moving on from Phil Rivers. If they can't trade up to get Tua.
Or if they can't stay put and take Herbert or whatever.
Let's say they could. Yeah. Would you rather have Herbert on a rookie deal at number, are they seven?
Six. Right.
At number six, would you rather have Herbert on a rookie deal, or would you rather pay Teddy Bridgewater $25 million to start?
Rookie deal for me.
It's I'm a no-brainer.
And I like Bridgewater more than you do, but I'm not doing that. I will not be in the $25 million range. I'm also not going to do the $18 million Brock Osweiler range either. Right? I'm either doing rookie deal or stud. I don't do the in-betweens.
Yeah, there's no
middle
you know
what I mean?
For you.
I'm not doing that.
Tannehill's on that deal. Worked pretty well this year.
It did.
Now, he won't be on that deal for long.
Right.
He's about to get probably dramatically overpaid after one little run, basically, for him, half season. 800-636-1067. You want to hop in on the Saints at all. Next, Aaron Judge, not happy with the Astros. Rob Manfred apologizing for something he said. The latest on Houston as the villain in Major League Baseball. We're Grant and Danny. We're on Twitter if you don't want to call us or can't get through on the phone for whatever reason.
At Funny Danny for me, and if you want Grant H. Paulson, if you forget that H, God help you. There's no point in tweeting at Grant Paulson. You put that H in there if you want to reach Grant H. Paulson.
There was some scuttlebutt at one point that all of the Twitter accounts that weren't active anymore would be completely done away with.
Well, I'm sure that happened, right? But they cleaned it up?
Maybe at Grant Paulson is going to become available. Is that not a thing anymore?
Not as far as I know. You know what happened, or what happens every once in a while on that platform? There's like nothing, and then all of a sudden, the largest spike in world history in terms of spammy, crazy link stuff, where they're like following you, retweeting you, all sorts of stuff, and then it'll go back to nothing again. So, have you noticed that? Like, we've been in a lull in terms of like porn bots or like other kind of weird things following us and retweeting.
Some change was made, I think.
Yeah,
where it became much harder to have all those bots and fake nonsense on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
And that was good. That was healthy.
That was good.
We're out of that phase. But where we still are is the phase where someone can just like not tweet for 10 years and keep a name that you might want.
Yeah.
We need to get out of that
phase. Still in that phase. Let me look him up, see what he's up to.
I'll tell you what he's up to. He's up to not tweeting since 2006. That's what he's up to. Before we get to the Major League Baseball Astros sign-stealing scandal and the latest fallout from players around the game, which we kind of give you an update on every single day, I thought it might be worth a couple of minutes here to talk Stephon Diggs for a second.
Mm.
So Stephon Diggs apparently wants out of Minnesota. He is doing this thing that is super annoying to me when players do this, where he just, speaking of social media and Twitter, gets on his account and posts all these veiled things.
My least favorite thing going right now.
He doesn't actually say, I want to be traded, but he just kind of makes it known that he's not that happy. And he'll post random pictures and videos and links to things. And you're just trying to piece this all together like you are a detective in some HBO series. And it's really, really frustrating. Stephon Diggs is a very good player. Okay? So don't take this as me not liking Stephon Diggs. I think he is excellent. I think he is a B-plus wide receiver who brings A-plus wide receiver baggage. Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does.
He is very good, and he's in his prime. He is 26 years old. He is a big play threat who can get open down the field, who tracks the ball at an elite level. Now, DeSean Jackson's the best at that. There's a group of guys behind him, and I would put Stephon Diggs at the head of that class. But you're bringing him in if you trade for this guy, which is what the Vikings are going to try to get somebody to do, it looks like. Knowing that he is a B-plus wideout who's going to give you like Hall of Fame wide receiver drama and needing attention and needing to be appeased and wanting the football and what did he tweet about today? And the question for a team is just going to be, do you want to put up with that? He signed a 5-year contract for $72 million before last season. And on the surface, that sounds like a pretty good deal.
Yeah, for everybody.
I think it is a good deal for Stephon Diggs for the team. His cap number this year is $14.5 million. The 2 years after this is 15. The last year of his deal goes down to a very team-friendly $12 million cap number. but he's actually still got 4 years left on his contract. He looks around and he says, wait a second, Robbie Anderson,
man.
Some Jag wide receiver like him is going to probably make the same amount or more than me this year when he gets paid. My contract's not good enough. And so now he wants out. My question is he going to want a new contract? Like in his own locker room right now, Adam Thielen, who's been the number one over him, more targets, more catches, wasn't healthy this year. You can make the case Diggs is scarier or a better football player or certainly faster, more explosive, what have you. But like Thielen was the guy that offense went through over Diggs when both were healthy over the last few seasons. I don't think he likes the Vikings because they run the ball too much. I don't think he likes the Vikings because, you know, he went from 100 catches to 60 catches this year in a year in which Thielen wasn't around.
Yeah, I think that's important.
But I also think he looks up and he goes, I'm the 12th highest paid wide receiver in football. Davante Adams makes more than me. A.J. Green, who never plays, makes more than me. Jarvis Landry, who's a slot receiver, makes more than me. Sammy Watkins, who's like the number three, basically, makes more than me. Thielen on my own team, who didn't play last year, makes more than me. Brandon Cooks, who's not as good as me, makes more than me. Now, when you get into the Hopkins, Evans, Odell, Tyreek Hill, Michael Thomas, Julio Jones category, those guys are better than him. But they're also making between $16 and $22 million.
I think Diggs is one of those guys where he could go to the right place and put up video game numbers. He's in Minnesota, he's put up very quality numbers. Back-to-back 1,000-plus yard seasons, averaging 7.5 touchdowns per. That's number one wide receiver stuff on a team, as you mentioned, that wants to run it on first down so badly.
Well, how about his yards per catch this year?
Uh-huh.
So he went for 1,000 last year, barely. This is 2018 I'm talking about. And that year he went for 1,000 on 100 catches.
Yep.
He averaged 10 a pop. They basically used him as a, I wouldn't even call it possession, like a volume guy where he'll catch four balls for 39 to 42 yards.
Just think of what he did against the Redskins. What, do you have 15 catches that game?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? And that was a year earlier. But yes, it was that kind of style. This year, it was a quality over quantity role for him. He might go a quarter or two without a target and then catch a 47-yard deep shot. He might go a quarter or two where Kirk Cousins hasn't looked at him and there's nothing been called for him by Kevin Stefanski in their heavy run play action game to the tight end and to the Z receivers, running those digs and those crossers. But all of a sudden, they dial something up deep corner for digs. He also fumbles a lot for a wide receiver.
Weird.
He fumbled four times and lost three fumbles this year. He also drops plenty of passes. Again, I would want him. I would sign him for $14 million. I think he's that good. But you just got to know that with him comes some stuff where he's a pain in the butt, too.
Yes. And right now, it's worth it. I mean, it's not such a, it's not Antonio Brown level pain in the butt. It's like early Antonio Brown pain in the butt, right? It's not this level.
Would you offer them anything if you were the Redskins?
Yeah. No, they'd probably turn it down. I don't know if I'd be able to give them enough to satisfy.
What would you be willing to give up that would get the deal done, let's say? Not just, hey, I'll make an offer they're going to reject because there's no point. That's a waste of everyone's time.
Yeah, biggest issue is that there's no second rounder for the Redskins this year. So it might have to include a future pick. Or a couple of picks and a player maybe that they're enticed by. I mean, to me, I'd include Trent Williams in any kind of deal and see if that helped lower my asking price a little bit. Just say, who do you want? Who do you need? Because to me, the thing that you shouldn't do in the NFL especially is trade for a guy, give up draft capital, then immediately have to pay a bunch of money to sign the guy, a.k.a. what Dallas did with Amari Cooper. Because now you're burning resources of both sides.
See, that would be my concern. If I'm the Redskins.
If you have to do a new contract right away, then I'm not doing it.
Yeah, if I can acquire him at 5 and 72, and it's now four left on that after 12 and a half. So it's basically like four years, $60 million.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially a little under 15 a pop now left on that contract. If I could do that, and he's willing and he's happy to, I just want to get out of Minnesota, man. Mike Zimmer is a dinosaur. We don't throw the ball like we should. We don't spread the team. We're playing out and actually have opportunities for me to be targeted 10 to 12 times and catch 8 to 10 passes. I want to go to a modern offense where I can put up numbers. If that's what he wants and he doesn't care about a contract, then I'm definitely interested.
Mm-hmm.
My hunch is, and this is just me speculating, but I think he looks at all these other receivers who have gotten paid and he goes, wait a second. I make basically the same money as Allen Robinson from the Bears or T.Y. Hilton from the Colts or like Alshon Jeffrey for the Eagles. How is it possible that I'm not in that higher? Like, why
in
is
that higher tier?
Adam Thielen making 16.2 and I'm making 14?
Yeah, they've decided when we're throwing to him, right? I mean, I'm the second option, and that guy, I'm telling you, I think that guy could be a star. I mean,
he's
look
the
at some
easy button for them, though. You know, like Thielen had an awful playoff game before he caught the big overtime throw to set up the game winner, and just watching the Vikings the last couple seasons, when they need something, when they're down and out, when their offense is sputtering, it's always Diggs who gets them going. Like, he'll make some big catch, big play, and they're right back in the football game. It's not Thielen as often.
Right.
But I just don't – I would want some type of commitment from him. A, the contract's fine, and B, the reason I've been a huge diva pain in the you-know-what the last 2 years is because I hated the Vikings or I hated Mike Zimmer or I wasn't happy or whatever the situation is. I need to know that's not who he is. I don't deal with receivers like that unless you are worth it to the point that I know I got the best receiver or one of them in the league.
To me, I mean, you look at the guys in the top of the league in terms of receiving yards, touchdowns, all the big production, right? You get the you know, the guys like Julio Jones, you're going to get Keenan Allen, you'll see DeAndre Hopkins, et cetera, right? The only guy up there with fewer than 90 catches is there are two guys. It's Mike Evans and Stephon Diggs, who put up those kind of numbers, those top 20 type numbers. Everybody else is dealing with well into the hundreds of targets. And Diggs is short of that. To me, this is one of those, the most classic, we talk about this in baseball all the time, he's a change of scenery candidate. This, to me, is the ultimate change of scenery candidate. I think you could have an explosion if he goes to some place that knows what the hell they're doing. Like, if he went and played for Bruce Arians in Tampa, while in between Jameis Winston picks, he's going to put up better numbers than Chris Godwin. I think Godwin's a beast. But Godwin was third in the league this year in receiving. 1,333 yards and 9 touchdowns. I think Diggs could supersede that. He's not catching Michael Thomas, who's going to catch 150 balls and 1,800 yards and set records along the way. But that guy, to me, is to a good offense should be knocking on Minnesota's door.
All right, next, Aaron Judge on the Astros. Why did Rob Manfred apologize? You're listening to Grant and Danny on the Fan. Yesterday, Danny and I talked about how outrageous Rob Manfred's comment was that he didn't take away the World Series trophy or the World Series from the Astros because it was just a piece of metal.
Just a hunk of metal.
Now, us being upset, fans in Section 317 at Nats Park being bothered by that, really not that important to Rob Manfred, but players around the sport took great issue with it and a lot of umbrage with that comment, and among others, Justin Turner absolutely pulverized him. He said he's never won anything in his life, and he's completely out of touch, and it's got the commissioner's name on the trophy, and it, basically the only thing belittling that trophy at this point is the fact that it is in any way related to the commissioner. I mean, he just annihilated him. Manfred yesterday apologized for the diminishment of the World Series trophy, though. He didn't have to do this, but clearly this is a sign that the water is starting to seep onto his boat.
Because as long as he can hear it.
He's not just barreling down the highway anymore going, nothing matters, his fingers are in his ears, la, 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 la. Now he's starting to apologize and trying to offer an olive branch to players that are angry at him.
You know, I had a long day on Sunday. I think I did 45 minutes on camera, and then I did a press conference. I have to say I made one mistake, at least, during that long day. And that was in an effort to make a rhetorical point. I referred to the World Series trophy in a disrespectful way. And I want to apologize for that. There's no excuse for it. I made a mistake. I was trying to make a point, but I should have made it in a more effective way. And again, I want to apologize for it.
I don't think he's apologizing for fans. I think this is strictly because
players.
He knows how mad the players, and not just players, managers, executives, other people were with that comment. The entire reason for their existence in this sport, other than to make money as a team, is to hunt that trophy down, basically. And then he just poo-pooed it. And they were really upset. I think he felt like this is a moment where I could completely lose everyone that matters to me. I've got to make amends.
Good for him. And by the way, that's what an apology, even no matter how sincere or insincere you think it was.
That's what it should sound
like. That's just what it's supposed to sound like. If we had a couple of those from the Astros, a couple of those from Rob Manfred, I don't think anybody would have the same level of anger that they will. But again, somebody pointed this out on Twitter yesterday. The first pitcher that hits an Astros batter and gets suspended will be suspended more than every Astros player in this thing combined. There's been no contrition. There's been no apology. All he's done so far is apologize about the way he's handled this entire saga, which has been incorrect. But at least we got something.
He admitted that he considered stripping Houston of the title, but he did not want to set a precedent nobody ever had.
I could have set a new precedent here. I felt and continue to feel that the best thing we can do for our fans is to give them the facts, put them in a position to make their own judgment as to what happened in 2017, what the significance of that particular World Series is. I also, and I've said this before, very concerned about opening the door to altering results that took place on the field. There are a lot of things that have happened in the history of the game that arguably could be corrected, and I just think it's an impossible task for an institution to undertake.
I actually agree with that statement.
I do too.
I don't know where that was a month ago, right? I mean, that to me is, people say, well, if you disagree with someone, it doesn't matter what they say, you're not going to like it. And that's not particularly true, because I can disagree with him as to how he handled this and know that it is impossible for him to get right exactly what to do with the Astros. That is true. If he went into more detail on why he didn't suspend the players and said, look, I can't legislate that. There are guys with different organizations. Some guys cheated 3 times. Some guys cheated 100 times. Should they get different or the same punishments? I'll never know how many times each guy cheated or how much they benefited from the scandal that was going on. All of that is probably true and fair. He hasn't said any of that until now. And I thought this was a helpful, legitimate, good press conference for him that he probably needed. But one thing that stood out to me was this. He went on to say he was surprised with how negative the response has been from players around the league. I am too. Apparently, a lot of people are not. Like, one of the things yesterday I heard was people are stunned that he's surprised that there's been this much blowback around the league. My reasoning for saying that there wasn't going to be this much was I thought there were so many teams doing things that were shady that you just kind of sit back and let it happen. In other words, I'm trying to think of a comp, but like, let's say you and three of your buddies, okay, are hanging out at a sports bar. You're like swiping on Tinder, just doing shtick, whatever, and you're all dating girls. And then that guy gets caught swiping on Tinder, and you know that you were doing the exact same thing. Your girlfriend goes, what do you think about that?
Yo, it's so terrible.
You might say like, oh, yeah, that's bad. But you're not going to like kill him because you were just doing the exact same thing.
Right, you're not going to publicly
Whereas if you've never done that before, you might go a little harder and be like, that is unacceptable. I can't. Or like just in general, right? Uh-huh. If you've done something comparable, you're not going to be the one to come out and put your neck out there to say what they did is so.
That's what was so surprising.
Completely unconscionable.
I mean, some of the teams that there have been rumors about. Again, the Dodgers have been rumored
Yankees,
to be doing this. Yankees,
Aaron Judge
too.
Is killing them. And Dodgers, every Dodger in existence pummeling them.
And they've gone hard with this. So now it kind of makes you scratch your head a little bit. Maybe something was done, but not to the degree that maybe the Houston was doing it. I don't know.
But this is Manfred on being surprised by the reaction around baseball.
It surprised me for 2 reasons, Evan. You know, first, I've been around a long time, and I've never seen the kind of commentary from players about other players in the entire time that I've been involved.
The other thing he said, and this will be the last cut we can play here, Thom, but where he talks about players should blame their own union. I thought this was kind of launching some more fighting words out there.
Yeah, throwing the ball back to the other side of the court.
He's basically saying, look, I'm taking a lot of punches. Here's my jab back at you. You're talking about me and the fact that I shouldn't have given them immunity. The reason I gave them immunity is because the CBA suggested that I should, and on top of that, gives me permission to do that. And he kind of blamed players for that possibility.
One of the principal complaints seems to be that the Houston players were not disciplined, and, you know, that lack of discipline, the immunity, was negotiated with the union that represents players.
And that was my point all along about the CBA going into this. That plus the negotiations that are upcoming for the deal when it expires in 2021, not wanting to run afoul of the MLB Players Association. How much better does that sound than, well, just look at their faces. They've got to think about this forever. Because that's how punishment works in our society. All the steroid guys, they didn't get suspended. They just had to think about it. His first answer when he had a crack at this was not that. Because that's reasonable. And that's something we've said all along. Don't insult our intelligence. He told us, well, I resent the idea that the Astros players haven't been punished. They got to think about what they did for the rest of their lives. You mean win the World Series?
Right.
And have to answer questions for a couple weeks before they go back to playing baseball?
Giancarlo Stanton made a good point today.
Yeah.
He said, if you get popped for steroids, you're not allowed to play in the playoffs. Most players will tell you they think this is worse than taking steroids.
100%.
Not only are you allowed to play in the playoffs, you're allowed to win a World Series and then not have any ramifications for having done so. Just a tough juxtaposition to wrap your head around there. Question for you guys next. We can open up the phones at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. Can Manfred respond? I mean, can he actually survive this and bounce back? Or is he currently probably the biggest villain in sports? I mean, who else is in that conversation? I'd be curious to see what people think. But is he just done now and he is known as this guy? This will be on his ledger forever. Or can he get to a point where we respect and like him as a commissioner again and somehow survive and wear this and get past it? 800-636-1067 from Grant and Danny.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.